This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And hello, Hearts of Oak. Thank you so much for joining us on a pre-record a few days before, and it is wonderful to have someone who I've seen from afar at many lockdown demos. I did bump into once when he interviewed Jared Batten on the UK Battle Bus back in the Euro elections 2019, and it is James Dellingpole. James, thank you for your time today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show, Peter.
Wonderful to have you, and we've kind of titled the discussion, the absurd times we live in, which can go anywhere. So that's the nice part of that. And can I just bring up where our viewers can find you, James? At James Dellingpole on Getter, on Twitter, and DellingpoleWorld.com. You can also find James there, and you can listen to his many podcasts with many fantastically interesting, eclectic guests over the years, but we'll get into some of that. But if I can give you, James, a slight, short introduction to our viewers. He's a writer, a journalist, a columnist, and has written for the Daily Mail, The Express, The Telegraph, The Times, The Spectator. He's published several novels and political books. For example, 365 Ways to Drive a Liberal Crazy. That was 2011. And 2012, Watermelons, How Environmentalists Are Killing the Planet, Destroying the Economy, and Stealing Your Children's Future. And he was executive editor at Breitbart. Those books will give you a feel for James. Now, James, I normally write a long introduction for a guest, but you're probably the most difficult person to pigeonhole. I've had Eric Metaxas on, and he talked about himself being an eclectic, but I think you top that. How would you introduce yourself?
I think I'm an ex-mainstream media journalist who's gone rogue. So it's quite interesting. You cited that book, you know, 365 Ways to Drive a Liberal Crazy, which was a potboiler I wrote for the American market. I think that politically, I'm a completely different person than the guy who wrote that book. A lot of the things I used to believe in prior to 2020, I really don't believe in now. I mean, I've completely cut loose from the mainstream. And I've lost many friends as a result, and I'm sure there's a lot of my former mainstream media colleagues who, if they talk about me at all, would say, "Oh, it's such a shame what happened to James Dellingpole. He used to be really good, but he's just gone and lost it. He's like a tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist loon. And what do we do with him? Well, I guess we just ignore him. Sad."
I will delve into all of that because I'm really curious about that and been interesting to follow that from afar. But can I ask, I saw in your Wikipedia a left field question, and you have extensive Wikipedia entry, but on that, your name, one of your middle names is Court, and I was wondering where that came from before jumping into the issues.
Well, you're probably the only person who has ever asked that, and probably the only person who ever
excellent
It's just a family name. Okay. My grandfather's middle name was Court, and I suppose my parents just thought, well, we must continue the family name. Let's give it to our firstborn. So that's what it is. Nothing more exciting than that.
That's fine. James, you have always remained as a commentator and never really delved into party politics. And I think the one time I actually met you was on that UK Battle Bus with Jared Batten when you interviewed him during the Europeans. Probably interviewed many different candidates from all a range of parties. And you strike me as someone similar to the Douglas Murray mould, who I know you've had on many times. And Douglas has stayed out of that party politics, and you have. And I'm curious to ask why you haven't jumped into party politics.
Well, I think there are a few lower forms of life than the Tory boy, the sort of person who votes Conservative through thick and thin, regardless of what their policies are, because what matters is the name on the tin. And it doesn't matter whether inside the tin you find kind of pure socialism, or whether you find something called, I don't know, one nation conservatism, whatever that is. I know whatever it is, I don't like it very much. So I think that people ought to be much more discriminating about their politics. I think that they ought to be about ideas, and they ought to be about supporting parties that advance good ideas and rejecting parties, however reverend and established, which no longer represent those ideas. I cannot see any possible reason why anyone would want to vote Conservative now. And I feel, the same applies to Labour. I don't know, the other parties, they don't really count for very much. I think that the whole, this is one of the big shifts that's happened to me in the last 2 years. I believe that the whole left-right paradigm is a construct. It's meaningless. And I think it probably always was meaningless. I don't think this is a new development in politics. I think it's probably got more evident. But I think that the idea that if you vote for a Conservative, vote for the person with the blue rosette, you will get X. And if you vote for the red one, you'll get Y. I think that has been... that is a notion which has been presented to us gullible voting public. Yeah. But actually, it's not real.
It's interesting because I think I read somewhere you described yourself back in the heyday of UKIP as your heart was with UKIP and your head was with the Conservative Party. And I'm wondering where your heart points to at the moment as you look out on the political scene.
Nowhere. I just look around with a mixture of despair and disgust. Because I think that the political system, I think democracy is utterly broken, broken beyond redemption. And I think that we're not going to get the better world that we deserve without a period of extreme turmoil. Mm. Now, that isn't to say that I think my good friend Toby Young often points out to me that revolutions never end well. They always end up in bloodshed, yeah, and often create a period of chaos followed by a new regime which is not much better than the one it replaced. I accept this. Nevertheless, the status quo is untenable. The justice system. And you think about the things that we're taught to believe. One of the things we're taught to believe as Englishmen is that, although you're not Englishman, are you? Or are you? What's your
I can accent? Be Northern Irish, but I'll be British. Yeah. Most English.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose what I'm saying is that we are brought up to believe that the English common law is one of the envies of the world, and that the reason that foreigners so love doing businesses in our country is that our judiciary are immaculate, unimpeachable, and that they can get justice. It's just bollocks. Our legal system is corrupt, politically correct, too often acts in the service of our corrupt state rather than in the interests of the individual, or indeed liberty or justice. You only have to look at the behavior of Parliament over the last 2 years to realize that the idea that these people in Westminster represent us the people is just nonsense. They act in the service of shadowy figures at a kind of supranational level. They're not answerable to the people. I think the police no longer police with consent. They're just the kind of fascistic boot boys of the regime. We could go on. The army. Look at the army. The army has decided to give our young fighting men and women these clot shots, which are going to render them more likely to have myocarditis, to be not fighting fit. They seem to be worryingly woke. All the senior officers seem to be have got there because they've mouthed the politically correct platitudes you need to get to the top. They're not about defending the realm anymore. They're about talking up the Russian threat, you know, as if we're still in the middle of a cold war with Russia, and so on and so forth. So I don't trust the system at all. I really am a kind of revolutionary or a rebel.
But is that any different from, are we in completely new territory, or has that always been the thrust of British life?
It's not just the thrust of British life. It's the thrust of life of everyone who lives in the world who isn't. Look, the battle, the enemy is plain in view, and the enemy has not been plain in view for most of civilization, or rather we've persuaded ourselves that this is not the case, that there isn't a kind of a tiny, narrow, I hate to use the word elite, because it implies like they're good people, are special, that, you know, you think about elite soldiers or whatever. No, these people are scum. The world is a criminal conspiracy.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. We watch shows like cop shows, and we're shown how what happens to, you know, say The Godfather. We know that what happens to these mafia bosses is that in the end they either end up being killed or imprisoned or driven into hiding. But that's just the lower level of criminality. The real criminalities, the real criminals, the master criminals who run the world, they never get caught because they've got so much money and power that they can just get away with murder, quite literally.
Yeah.
These are the people who rule the world. And it's most people can't accept this because it just does not compute. They've been brought up to believe by the system, by the education system, first of all, and by agents of propaganda like the BBC, that we live in a world where politicians represent the interests of the people, that the courts dispense justice, that the police more or less get their man, you know, they get criminals. I mean, you actually look at the how many crimes are actually solved by the police, how many burglaries, how many even murders are solved. They're not very good at doing what we're encouraged to believe they do on cop shows. It's quite a big ask for people to realize that we really are living in a matrix, and that the entire world is a kind of a construct. The world as we see it is a construct, and that the reality is much, much darker.
I wanted to jump down that rabbit hole with you, but last on the political side, where do we go whenever our politicians can do whatever the hell they choose and whatever the hell they want? We've seen that on the whole Partygate issue, that the public are told one thing, but politicians can just put two fingers up. And I am quite surprised in a seemingly democratic society that politicians in the UK can actually do what they want and are seemingly untouchable.
But this is good. What's happening is that we are beginning to realise that not only do our politicians not care about us, that they are massive hypocrites, that they do one thing to us to another. Not only do they behave in this way, but they no longer even care that we can see them doing this stuff. Now, this is good. This is a shift. It's a bit like when you go and see when you've got back trouble and you go and see your chiropractor or your osteopath.
Yeah.
And sometimes after your treatment, things seem to be much, much worse and you're in great pain, but your osteopath or chiropractor will say, good. Now what we want to see is change, because that's a movement. Ultimately, we're going to get in the right place. And I feel that what we're going through now is necessary chaos. We cannot ever live in a good, happy, just world without a period of chaos. It just cannot be, because the status quo is untenable.
That chaos with the COVID tyranny that we have faced, and it probably took me 2 or 3 months to realize that this was not 15 days to flatten the curve. I fitted on with everyone because I thought I'd be wise and wear a mask for the first month, and then thought, well, why am I doing this? But from the very beginning, you've been vocal on it. And I'm wondering why you decided or felt that you had to be fairly outspoken right from the beginning.
So, as you know, I do this podcast, which is now my livelihood. The Delling Pod is one of the things that I most, of all the things I've tried in my career as a sort of journalist, commentator, whatever, the podcast is the thing I've most enjoyed, because I can just, I'm free to say what I want, have conversations with really interesting people. And since I went down the rabbit hole, a lot of my conversations ask the question that you're asking now: why me? And often my guests are asking themselves the same question. What is it about us that enables us to see clearly what's going on when so many people are as if they've been under a glamour, under a spell, a spell cast by some wicked wizard, which I think is more or less what has happened. The people are subject to groupthink. It's the madness of crowd, the delusions of crowds. And I suppose I've never really been, I come from the Midlands. My dad is Birmingham, my mother's Black Country. And in that part of the world, we do like to take the piss. And I've always had that, always throughout my life. You know, I remember in class, even though I was one of the cleverer kids, and you know, I got to be a school prefect, but not because I was sensible and do-goody. It was more that, you know, like, well, he's one of the clever kids, you know, you've got to give him that. But always in class, I was always looking for the angle for making a joke, the angle for not disrupting the class horribly necessarily, but definitely not taking anything too seriously. And this has stayed with me through my life. I went to university and I watched my contemporaries, Boris Johnson, David Cameron, etc. I mean, a lot of these people have become household names for one way or another. I mean, I was in a weird generation. My generation seemed destined for greatness somehow, or at least destined to become part of the establishment. And I watched them all practicing to be grown-ups, playing at being grown-ups, and I thought, yeah, but this is just a game. This is just you're acting. Why can't you just be real? And I'm just hazarding a guess here about why I'm the way I am and why I saw through this bollocks when so many people haven't. And I think it is, I won't play the game.
Yeah,
I don't like playing the game. I don't want to be a grown-up. I want to be the naughty boy. I've always wanted to be the naughty boy.
How has that affected you? Because some of the interviews, you are really naughty. I mean, you really do take a very different line than what you're supposed to take. How has that affected those, obviously, your background, public school and Oxford and all of that? So how has that affected those connections and relationships?
Well, it's weird. Some of my old friends just won't talk to me anymore. And some of them, the wiser ones, there was an old friend of mine from Oxford I met the other day called Nell. And this is just typical of that Oxford generation. Nell's father was the cabinet secretary at the time, Robin Butler. And I said, Nell, what was I like at Oxford? Do you remember? And she said, yeah. You were mischievous. That was your sort of characteristic. You were just like mischievous. You were naughty. And those people like Nell, who understood who I was then, understand who I am now, and they love me for it. You know, they accept that. But others just go, well, he's really not fit for polite company. He won't play the game. He won't be like us. Mm. He really ought to have grown out of this stuff by now. I think the time has come to cut our ties with him.
Well, yes, I completely understand that, and I felt exactly the same issues on this issue. But you're kind of in a mold that you should really be reading what the Telegraph is telling you, and then accept that as your worldview. But yeah. I understand that kind of streak within you. But then really, you've made a quite a big choice that, after a few weeks of getting the daily death figures, after a few weeks of the front page telling you one thing, you've chosen, actually, I'm going to get my information somewhere else. I'm going to find out somewhere else. And what sparked that off, and where did you begin to go for that information?
Well, the thing is, Peter, I'm very old-fashioned in that I believe that a journalist's job is to seek out the truth.
Mm.
Regardless of how much people don't want to print the truth, regardless of how many obstacles are put in your way. I mean, I never thought of myself as a bold investigative hack, but I accidentally became one a few years ago, about a decade ago, when I started looking into the whole climate change bollocks thing. And it is complete bollocks. Everything that you see in the mainstream media about climate change, everything that David Attenborough says about climate change, is a lie. It is complete and utter bollocks. It is as much bollocks as the whole COVID pandemic was bollocks. So in a way, I had a bit of a head start. I realized that it is possible for the media, the mainstream media, and the scientists, the experts, to be telling you one thing, and the truth to be the complete opposite of what they say. So that kind of gave me the necessary skepticism, the degree of distrust for the media, which came in handy when the COVID pandemic. Look, you said I was there, I was a skeptic right from the beginning. It's not quite true. Very, very early on, I was following quite closely the sort of the reports that were leaking out from China onto the internet and obscure channels. You know, some of them obviously were a bit absurd, like the people apparently dropping dead in the streets, but some of them seemed quite plausible. I mean, looking back, I think probably this was the CCP's propaganda machine sowing, you know, misinformation. But there was a brief period where I thought that the coronavirus was an unprecedented or a near unprecedented viral threat, which was going to cause serious health issues. I hadn't looked into the Spanish flu. I hadn't looked into germ theory, the flaw of. I hadn't looked into, you know, the history of Jonas Salk and why the story about polio is not all it's cracked up to be and so forth. I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't know much about Robert Kennedy. This was what I discovered gradually. I just knew that there were reasons to distrust the government narrative.
You've had Laura Dodsworth on. I've read her book, State of Fear, fantastic book. And she talked about, as you mentioned, the people falling over. And as a journalist, she began to look into the background of that. And no one actually knew where it came from. And it is frightening that we can be given a story that actually no one wants to corroborate. And everyone just agrees that is the fact. And yet no one wants to look behind it. And that's a frightening place to be, that we can fall victim to such, a hoax.
I tell you what really, really pisses me off at the moment, Peter, and it really, really annoys me. We have just gone through 2 years of tyranny.
Yep.
The closest most of us living have experienced what it might have been living behind the Iron Curtain at the height of communism. I mean, actually, the restriction on our freedoms was often greater than people living behind the Iron Curtain would have experienced under communism. We've had the government actually killing people, literally murdering old people in old people's homes with a drug called midazolam. which stops their breathing and effectively kills them. We've had people being condemned to death with untreated cancer because the NHS, our NHS, our bollocks NHS, which I never clap for, wasn't doing its job, hasn't been doing its job. Mm. Doctors haven't been doing its job. They haven't been seeing patients. You know, you'd have thought doctors have one job. It's to look after people's health. They haven't been doing that. Churches haven't been doing their job either. Yeah. They haven't been able people to worship. That's a separate gripe. Mm. But we've seen so many terrible things have been done to the people of Britain. Things that but 2 years ago would have been prompted scandalized headlines on the front pages of every tabloid newspaper every day for the whole year. No shortage. Look at the boys who've actually died. We're talking about sort of 13-year-old boys dropping dead after taking the clot shot. Mm. I mean, we should be outraged. We should be marching on number 10 with pitchforks and demanding the heads on spikes of all the ministers responsible. It is a disgrace. And this stuff was totally obvious to me, to people like me, throughout that period. I knew that the vaccines, so-called, they're not even vaccines. I knew the experimental mRNA treatments were dangerous, that they hadn't been sufficiently tested, that they were still in their trial phase. They hadn't completed their trial phase. I knew that the drug companies had so arranged it that they weren't going to be liable for any injuries arising from these treatments. I knew the whole thing was a con. I saw at first hand, as a journalist trying to report on this stuff and being unable to do so, that hydroxychloroquine was an effective prophylactic against this COVID-19 or whatever it actually is. It hasn't been isolated. I knew that this was being suppressed by the World Health Organization and by the big pharma companies, which are in bed with WHO, in order to enable them to justify permitting the use of these experimental vaccines. Mm. I saw the same thing happening with ivermectin. Now, I am not Mr. Bloody Scoop. I'm really not the world's top investigative reporter. I am not privy to secret information that nobody else, no other journalist can find out because I'm Mr. Scoop with my special journalistic hat, which gives me special abilities to find out this stuff. This information was available to everyone.
Yeah.
To all my journalistic colleagues. So how is it that only now, only 2 years into this scandal, are they finally going, oh, wasn't it really embarrassing the way that we all allowed ourselves to be locked down in this way? And, oh, maybe the government should have looked into this stuff a bit more. And, oh, isn't it maybe a bit of a scandal? What were they doing for the last 2 years? I cannot respect anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I could probably count on the fingers of one hand the journalists in the right-wing commentary. I mean, never mind the left-wing commentary. They've been absolutely shit. But can you name any sort of feisty, edgy, outspoken right-wing commentators who rose to the occasion in the last 2 years? They were all shit.
Yeah.
And they should be ashamed of themselves. And I will never take them seriously as journalists again. All the people I used to look up to.
Yeah.
I used to, you know, I used to want a career in the mainstream media. I used to want a career in, I used to want a column in the Mail or the Sun or wherever. You know, I mean, I used to want to be like Rod Little, who I think was paid something like his column in the Sun and the Sunday Times, upwards of $1 million a year he got for this stuff. Now, okay, I wasn't going to get that maybe, but I was probably going to get something maybe in my dreams, maybe $300,000 or $400,000 a year. You could live on that. You could live on that. And that would be the culmination of all the years I spent cutting my teeth, making my name and stuff. But it never happened. And I'm so glad it never happened because I would not want, you could pay me $1 million a year. I would not work for those scumbags now. They are part of the problem. They promoted the big lies. Look at the Mail. Look at the Sun. Their performance has been dreadful. They have just been agents of the government propaganda machine, which is ultimately the globalist cabal's propaganda machine. These are the enemies of the people. They purport to be friends of the tabloids. They pretend like they look after the common man. They look after their interests. You know, they love campaigning, don't they, on issues of public interest.
Yeah.
It's all a sham. Sorry, have I ranted? Well, it's just my rage and disgust bursting out that my trade has not covered itself in glory. And that's why I've cut myself loose from these useless gits.
No, because I've looked at the, as you said, some of the media on the right and expected, surely they'll come up, surely they'll challenge what's happening. But all they would do is maybe do half a page of an investigative report every so often. The Mail would throw in one, the Telegraph would throw in one. It would have a little comment piece. But then the whole front page would be death, death, death. And I'm wondering why they don't challenge it.
So, well, I mean, it's obvious why they don't challenge it, because the government was, for the last 2 years, the government has been propping up our legacy media.
Mm.
The legacy media deserves to die. People don't buy newspapers anymore. Yeah. The only reason that the Mail Group is doing well, for example, is because of its the sidebar of shame on its Mail Online. And the Mail Online is very, very good at kind of ripping off every story, going that individual bloggers and so on might find a story, and very quickly the Mail Online will pick up on it. So, I respect their ability to find this new business model. That's fine. But basically the mainstream media is not fit for purpose, and it's been propped up like a kind of an old industry by the taxpayer. And so the quid pro quo for all this taxpayers' money that's been poured into the mainstream media is that you are not allowed to go against our official narrative. We are in a state of war against this deadly virus.
Yeah.
Therefore, you must support us, and you must not question what we've been doing. You must not question the vaccines. And so, for example, even the edgy, outspoken, token right-wing columnists that you find in papers like the Telegraph, every article even mildly critical of the pandemic narrative or of government policy, everyone has had a paragraph saying, but the vaccine rollout has been a fantastic success.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Imagine how much worse things would have been without the success of the vaccine rollout. And these vaccines are safe and effective. And oh, that woman who was made a dame for her, you know, the woman from the Oxford group was made a name dame for bringing out the AstraZeneca one and got a standing ovation at Wimbledon. My goodness, she deserved all that. They have to toe the line. I just despise these people.
Not only the media, but the journalists. I mean, my huge concern is no one is actually held to account. I mean, we've got a pathetic Conservative Party, and you've got a small group that will oppose. And then, well, we had 99 of them, but I remember back a year ago, there were maybe 20 Conservatives and a handful of DUP. And again, the media don't actually report it. Now, is there any cost to pay for failing to protect the public? And it seems though, no, they can all get away with it and it doesn't matter what's happened.
Well, this is where we need that meme of the cat, sharpening its claws. We've got to bide our time. We've got to knit like Madame Defarge and hope that that we're getting signs, aren't we? We're getting signs of change. I think I've just written a piece actually about the Canadian truckers protests, which seems to be catching on in a way that all the street protests around the world haven't caught on. I mean, and I think the difference is that I love going on those protests, and I love being, I've finally found my people, that, you know, this is who I am. And these are the best people in the world. I love them. I love them. The awake. But the normies look at us with our witty placards and our obsession with things like 5G and stuff, and they just think these people are dangerous conspiracy theorists. Mm. Whereas they look at truckers and they think, well, these are the people who are the guys who ensure that our supplies arrive on time, and they're not all crazies. And if these people are saying enough is enough, then they've given me permission as a normie to realize, yeah, enough is enough. Hey, I should get out and protest too, because what's happening is wrong. And I finally woken up from this stupor I've been in for the last 2 years. Yeah, we've got to do something about this stuff. You've seen, for example, that are they called governors in Canadian provinces?
Yeah.
The governor of Saskatchewan has decided to rescind the mask the vaccine mandates. Yeah. Well, I thought that Canada was going to be stuck in hell forever, because I'd seen no signs of resistance in Canada before. Not really.
Yeah.
Same in Australia. Okay. Yeah. You know, respect to those who did take to the streets and who did hold out against the vaccines. I shouldn't call them vaccines because they're not. But generally, it seemed like the populace of Australia and Canada had just kind of rolled over and just surrendered. And now we're seeing signs that maybe there is going to be some resistance. So who knows? You know what happens with revolutions? It just needs the spark, and then it catches fire, or all that dry brushwood, and suddenly you've got, you know, rainforests being burned down and koalas dropping out of trees. Poor koalas.
I think the truckers has worked, because they're shutting off the parts of the border, and when it affects trade of a country, then it begins to kick in. Yeah. So that's why I think possibly it's working.
Well, Peter, of course, you make a very good point that I neglected to make, which is that ultimately you've got to hit these guys where it hurts in the economy. I mean, there's another victory we've won recently. I say we. I'm not an NHS nurse or anything, but I have so much respect for those doctors and nurses who held out against taking the clot shot, despite the most appalling coercion, or as Toby Young rather tragically called it, incentivization. Yeah, it's really an incentivization when the government says to you, yes, you can keep your job as long as you take this experimental gene therapy, which could give you myocarditis or microclots, or it could affect your periods, or it could. That's all you've got to do to keep your job. What's not to like? And weirdly enough, these people in these nurses, who after all, many of them had seen it firsthand, the damage that these clot shots are doing, they said, no, we're not going to take this shit. And at this point, I mean, it's not like this evidence has not been with us for some time. Mm. The people like Sajid Javid and the appalling Matt Wancock, these people have known all along that the NHS cannot function if, what is it, 120,000 people are booted out of their jobs for not taking this coercive vaccine. Yeah. They've known about this, and we finally witnessed what happens when an unstoppable force meets an apparently immovable object. That apparently immovable object, which is government policy, has suddenly gone, well, we've got to surrender because we can't do anything else, because people will not tolerate 120,000 doctors and nurses and carers leaving the system. And that's great. It's people power.
But it's been real. I mean, we have Lilith, who started NHS 100K, and she's with us on Monday. But it's been interesting that the government have decided that actually these people can continue working, even though they think they're a threat to the public because they haven't been unvaxxed. So either they remain a threat, in which case don't let any of them work in a hospital, or they're not a threat, in which case let them work. And the government, once again, don't know what the hell they're doing.
We've seen these double standards. It's very, very clear. Look, this is one of my main arguments with Toby on London Calling. And I love the fact that Toby disagrees with me so much, because I think it's good for us to play out these roles. I am the guy who's gone down, the awake person who's gone down the rabbit hole. If Toby were down the rabbit hole with me, it would be shit, wouldn't it? Because my points wouldn't be so...
I'd like him to go down the rabbit hole. I really would.
Oh, I would, but I wouldn't imagine... It would take the wind out of my sails because I wouldn't be able to be so snarky and dismissive of all the stuff he says. But Toby's line all along, which is the line of the kind of the Tory establishment, which is that the only reason that the government killed us all off, you know, killed all those kids with myocarditis and yeah, killed all those people who committed suicide and killed all the people who had untreated cancer. The only reason they did all these terribly evil things is that they believed, because they were told by the SAGE committee, that if they did not do this stuff, then it would be much, much worse. Mm-hmm. My contention is the government never believed any of this stuff, because if they yeah ever had believed that it was a serious threat, then they wouldn't, for example, at the G8 summit have had these parties with the Queen where yeah none of them were wearing masks.
Yeah.
Would they? Yeah. If they believed it was the new Black Death, mm, they'd have taken precautions. But you can see from their private behavior that they never believed any of this stuff. So there must have been another reason why they did this stuff. And it's not because they believed that there was a deadly pandemic.
Well, I thought that people would have woken up after all the Partygate, because supposedly Boris was nearly dead from this awful virus. But a month later was there drinking, having fun with his friends, happily coming into contact with this virus that may kill him again. If it really was going to kill him, then you wouldn't want to go out. You'd stay at home and would never go out your front door. So it seems as though actually possibly none of that ever happened. Wouldn't to join you down the rabbit hole.
There are certain moments in history where I would love to have been a fly on the wall, and I wonder if the truth will ever come out. I'd love to know what happened with George Osborne when he was on yeah Oleg Deripaska's yacht.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to know what really happened when Boris Johnson disappeared for a number of days, apparently with a near terminal case of COVID. Do we believe it? I don't know. I mean, I genuinely don't know. I suppose it might be true, but if it was reported in the mainstream media, probably it was a lie.
Yeah.
That's got to be yeah our default assumption.
No, completely. James, ask me about you. I've been really enjoyed some of your guests you've had on. Let me go to some of them for the viewers in case they don't know. Brett Weinstein, Jason Miller, Patrick Moore, Laura Dodsworth, Calvin Robinson, Naomi Wolf, Dr. Mike Eden, Charlie Ward, Ezra Levant, Tommy Robinson, Katie Hopkins, Jacob Rees-Mogg, Tim Martin, Tom Holland, Peter Hitchens, Douglas Murray, and a wide range of guests. How do you personally make a decision on who you're going to have on and what you're going to cover?
Oh, I don't. I just go, oh, fuck. I better do another podcast. Who can I get? I don't plan. I think probably, do you know what? I think probably God guides me. Now, I mean, he probably does. I just sort of bumble along. I'm not one of those great strategic planners. I just sort of go where the spirit moves me. If that doesn't sound too weird.
No, not at all. And I mean, I've watched this stuff, and I thought you'd be a perfect fit for something like GB News, which I've been impressed with, having after Andrew Neil went and Nigel has kind of saved GB News, and they've got some edginess on the side, and they allow that. It is mainstream in some respects, but on the other side, it does allow that edginess and questions to be asked. And I mean, that would be yeah an interesting fit.
Yeah, well, it's true. Could they afford me? It's the thing is, I really kind of like my life at the moment, which tends to involve, I go riding twice a week. I like to accept invitations to go shooting. I mean, obviously we're about to move out of the field sports season, so I don't know what I'm going to do after that. but if I had a proper grown-up day job where I had to go to bloody London, which I don't really like very much. I mean, I think I'd be really good. I think I'd pull in massive audiences, or I'd definitely pull in a certain constituency.
Mm.
I'd be really good. But the questions are, A, could they afford me? And B, am I not too out there for them? Because the problem is that Ofcom are such bastards.
Yeah,
I think that Ofcom is a real barrier to free speech in this country. They seem to have this stupid notion of balance where, in order to show that they're not dangerously against the state position, that they have to get a shill like John Gaunt on to represent the government and represent COVID Nazism. I don't know. Maybe I'm too out there, but we'll see.
We've had Calvin Robinson on before, and I've been impressed by his strong views. And I've been impressed with him going on GB News and holding on to those views and not just deciding to debunk them just to take on a more mainstream narrative. So I think it does give that.
They've got some goodies. They've got Mark Dolan.
Yeah.
They've got the Coast guy.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, he's a hero. And who else we got? We've got Dan Wharton's pretty good.
They've got some
good people. You're right. That what they really need is some Dellingpole spice. And I don't mean the cheap marijuana substitute that prisoners take.
you talked about going shooting. Do you think you'd ever go over to Texas and join to go shooting on goodness InfoWars? What's his name? I've just forgotten his name.
Alex Jones,
yes. That would be a great shooting experience.
Alex is great. I would love to go on a gun tour of America and just try out things like, you know, I've never shot a Barrett 50 caliber sniper rifle, for example. I'd just like to feel that impact, just that recoil just once. Guns are cool.
No, absolutely. Another one of your guests on that I've gone really well with was Brand of London. I know you discussed then Israel and going to Israel, and with all those restrictions, and Israel's been one of the most restrictive countries on travel, and then you've got many other countries like the States or Australia have kept those restrictions. I'm wondering what your thoughts are going forward. Yeah. Do you think you and I will not be able to travel to most parts of the world, or do you think that within the next maybe 6 months that those will begin to be lifted?
I think that they're going to start lifting. It's weird. I don't know quite what's going on at the moment. I'm very suspicious. I think that we are being given a period of freedom for some reason. But I don't think that this is I know it's not a sign that it's all over. I think it's going to get much, much worse. I think ahead of us, we've got the collapse of fiat currencies, which is inevitable. The collapse of the financial system, it's imminent. We're going to have the attempted introduction of central bank digital currencies. We're going to have massive supply chain issues, which we've already seen, you know, caused by Chinese Communist Party, caused by the cabal. This is all part of the plan. 5G, I think, is going to be a massive, massive problem. Mm. It's quite clever. When you see how these guys roll, how devious they are, you'll notice that at the very, very beginning of the pandemic, there were these stories about these crazy guys who were blaming 5G towers and were attacking 5G towers.
Yeah.
I think that these were designed to discredit the resistance movement before even opposition to 5G became a thing.
Yeah.
It was preemptive. And I think that at the time I knew nothing about 5G, and I thought, well, it's obviously nonsense that these towers could have any connection with any bad stuff, because they wouldn't do that. Who would do this? Who would do this to us? Now I think no. Mm. I think that the 5G towers will probably react, whatever it is that the 5G towers, when they get switched on, they're going to cause seriously deleterious effects in people who've taken the clot shots with the graphene oxide and so on. I think that, I worry about this stuff. But yeah, for the moment, I think that we are going to get a period where borders are going to open up. We're going to be free to travel, ish. Some countries are going to be slower than others. I think Australia and New Zealand will probably stay in the dark ages for many years to come.
Yeah.
But other places will be freer.
Hmm. Jim, thank you for your time. It's wonderful to chat to you. It's great. And I said I've enjoyed.
I was slightly in ranto mode, so I hope I wasn't too unfocused.
Absolutely not. Can I ask you again, putting up where people can find you again, any particular guest you've had on over the many podcasts you've had that have really stood out with you?
I love all my children. there have been some. From my normie period, one of my favorite ones was a podcast I did with Sean Langan. Just because it was different from other podcasts, it was about what it's like being held hostage by the Taliban under sentence of death. And he's such a good storyteller, and it's very, very moving. Another one I did with a guy called Jerry Marzinski, which actually completely changed my view about the world, about the nature of the world, about demons particularly, and helped me on my path towards Christianity. I was so glad I caught Roger Scruton before he died.
That was
a fantastic chat we had. There have been a few duffers. I'm not going to name them. Been a few kind of conversations with chancers who were just kind of some people who were too loud or too brash. And didn't really get that what I do is have conversations. I don't really want them ranting at me. It just doesn't work. But generally, I just think my podcast is really, really good. And I mean, this is where I'm going now. I'm pretty much cutting loose from my last connections with the mainstream media or with day jobs. And I'm just going to be doing podcasts and articles. I've joined Locals.
Okay.
I'm on Substack. You can find my stuff on Odyssey, on Rumble. YouTube, I've pretty much been driven off. I'm still on Patreon and Subscribestar. I've got some, loyal supporters there. I've got a Telegram channel, which is private, so it's quite hard for people to join. I don't know what would happen if I opened it up and made it public. I'm just worried about all the kind of the trolls and 77th Brigade people I might guess. But I'm out there. I mean, I really am out there. And I'm looking to build my constituency of sharklings.
Well, that I know that people will enjoy watching, and most of our viewers and listeners are fully on that. The people we had Robert Malone on a couple of months ago, and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny back with us at the end of the month. So
you've had some good guests.
Yeah, it's been good talking to those. So let me just finish off with our viewers, Jim, before I let you go. Thank you to our viewers or listeners for watching or listening. Great to have you with us. And this will get to you on Thursday. So look forward to seeing you on Saturday, News Review with David Vance. So do join us on that. And if you haven't heard any of the Delling Pod, I'd be surprised if you've been living under a rock for a few years. But if you haven't, then do make sure and go over to dellingpoolworld.com, and you can just find the links on the left, drop them down, and you can listen to any of the podcasts or watch some of the videos. So everything is there and available for you. And Jim's might even start using his Getter more often, so which is the place to be. I can persuade him, he can upload all the videos through that.
Oh, I should. I mean, it's belt and braces, isn't it? You need to use as many different sites as you can, because some of them will inevitably ban you.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, on that, I'll thank you to our viewers and look forward to seeing you on Saturday. So thank you.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.